We try to break down all that is happening with Florida State and their threat to get out of the ACC. Can it happen? Where would they go? What would happen to everyone else? Which leagues? It's trouble. Plus, Taco Bell holiday party just gets out of control.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Like, if this was ever about anything else, they'd show that it was. This is about football viewers and appeasing Fox, CBS, NBC, and in the SEC's case, ESPN. I mean, that's who's running college athletics, the TV network.
Russ Dellinger.
Sure feels like, Dan, we're heading for 3 20-team leagues where about 10 teams are cut out, right, or left out. Two being Washington State and Oregon, maybe 6 to 8 more in the ACC.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod emergency. That's right.
Woo!
You know, we were talking about how college football tries to jam everything into the exact same window of time. We've got signing day was Wednesday. This is Thursday. We had transfer portal going on right now. We got bowl games. We've got the playoff. We still got some remnants of the coaching carousel, certainly in the of the assistant coach variety. Players can go in and out of the portal right now. Why not throw some conference realignment in? Mm-hmm. Right, Ross?
Yeah, I know. Don't have enough already. And then everybody's trying to get Christmas, last-minute Christmas gifts, Dan.
Oh, I'm sure Coach Saban got Miss Terry taken care of much earlier than this. He would never wait to the end. Or you mean the reporters? Yeah, nobody cares.
Yeah, I meant us.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I don't care. I'm not worried about a $10 million man, Nick Saban, who can go, you know, have people go buy gifts for him.
That's true. He's probably got an associate athletic director in charge of Miss Terry's gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Got to do what you got to do. Pat is still in South America. Thought he'd take a quiet week off. So much for that. Ross Dellinger story this morning, Yahoo Sports. Florida State is expected to soon start the process of its long-discussed divorce from the ACC. There will be a board of trustee meeting Friday. The result of the meeting could produce a formal legal filing in what many describe as the first step to achieving an exit from the ACC's binding grant of rights. Look out.
Yeah.
Look out below. Conference realignment never dies. It's like the plate tectonics in Iceland. Eventually the fissures come up and eventually the lava comes for your town. Give us a little bit more detail of what Florida State is likely to do here, Ross.
Yeah. Long time coming. You can go all the way back to around a year ago or so when maybe even more than a year ago now, when Florida State Athletic Director Mike Alford held kind of a presentation for the Board of Trustees about how far that Florida State is falling behind the SEC and Big Ten, and how the ACC is not a place for the Noles, that they need to get out of it in some way, need to get out of the grant of rights. But it's been building, you know, for a year or so. And this was supposed to happen around 2 weeks ago. There was quite a bit of buzz on a board meeting happening December 8th, you know, and then it kind of dragged a little bit. And now it will happen December 22nd, 3 days before Christmas on Friday, before the holiday weekend. And what's supposed to happen in this board meeting, the expectation at least, is that Florida State board members, who have been, just like Michael Alford, the athletic director, and the president, have been very outspoken about needing to make more revenue and get out of the ACC, they will probably take some kind of vote or approval process will happen for then the school to file some kind of legal, make some kind of legal move to get out, to be the first step in getting out of the grant of rights, which is probably, if you talk to legal experts and such, probably filing a declaratory judgment action, which is basically the goal of which would be to have a judge rule that the grant of rights is not binding, and Florida State is not bound by the grant of rights. So that's kind of the goal here. I think all of this was accelerated. I think this portion of the steps in leaving, which there are plenty of them, I think this portion was supposed to be maybe in the spring, but everything kind of accelerated with the college football playoff snub.
Absolutely. Playoff committee decision to go SEC over undefeated ACC champion absolutely played a role in this. It fired everybody up. All right, so the background, the ACC is in the middle of a 20-year grant of rights television deal, runs through the 2037 season. It's paying teams the low 30 million range right now. They went with that deal. They thought it was the stability it would offer for all that period of time. Florida State was part of that decision making, and a prominent, obviously a prominent member of this league. However, since then, SEC and Big Ten have both expanded. They've both made new media deals. They both will make new media deals again before 2037. We have no idea what the live television right market will be by then either. It's a little softer than people would think right now. Needless to say, media is not doing great in this country, even when it's showing games. So that 31 million, 30, whatever they're getting, Big Ten and SEC schools could be doubling that number soon. And for Florida State, that is unappealing, perhaps untenable. How do you maintain competitive balance if you're Florida State, your opponents, as much as in the ACC, are Florida, Auburn, Georgia, Alabama, all the ones surrounding you there in Tallahassee, are making 30 million more a year to spend. If we get to revenue sharing, which is certainly a possibility, how the heck do you revenue share against that?
Mm-hmm.
So many things. So they feel financially they have to get a better deal, and they deserve it. They're being dragged down by being part of a conference where there aren't a whole lot of television properties that television gets excited for, networks get excited for. They have proposed getting a bigger share and kind of making some of the Wake Forest and Boston colleges, if you will, a second tier member sort of. There's been some creative moves where if you're more successful, there's a pool of money, you can make a little bit more, but FSU is not getting what they want. And then the idea that 13-0 in the ACC wasn't good enough to get into this playoff really got them up in their feelings, understandably. That said, that deal is over. We have an automatic bid in the ACC pretty much every year, almost assuredly every year. And I'm not so sure that you care about that so much, but that really rallied opposition to why are we in the ACC at all if we're not getting the money, we don't have the future, and all of that. So I think we're moving in that direction. You agree with that sentiment? I know both of us have talked to a lot of people today and all week and all of that.
Yeah, and a great point about the future of athlete compensation. I think that kind of gets lost here. We're going to have a new model of athlete compensation pretty soon. You saw the proposal by Charlie Baker. We talked about it a couple weeks ago at length on the pod. About playing schools paying players directly with no cap on that. And those funds have to come from somewhere, right? And they're likely going to come from three of the biggest revenue sources for universities, which are donations, ticket sales, and TV money. And so if you're 20 to 30 million behind annually, imagine compounding that by 3 years, you're 100,000, 75,000 to 100, or 75 million to 100 million behind a school. Imagine Florida State being $75 million over a 3-year stretch behind Vanderbilt. That might be a thing that could happen. And so, You're talking about paying players directly with that pool with a potentially uncapped, no limit. That's a real issue. And I remember sitting in with a ACC head coach over this offseason. And, you know, it's a thing I hadn't even thought about, really. He was talking about the things I have thought about, which are, you know, paying assistant coaches, right, and the pool of money and whatever. This coach had just lost a coach to Georgia or Florida, I can't remember, and the assistant left because he got his salary doubled. So things like that we think about. But then the coach brought up, in what happens when we start being able to legally pay players with a pool of money and they have this pool and we have this pool? And it's a great point, and it's something that I'm sure is on the minds of everyone in Tallahassee in doing this. One of the other things I want to mention is just the ACC as a whole, right? There's been a lot of consternation and divisiveness in the league going back a while. It is probably, you know, along revenue generating, you know, mission, academic nature, whatever lines, it's probably the most divided power league, maybe the most divided league overall, right? Because you've got a group of mostly public, pretty large universities that are high revenue producers in football and basketball. And then you've got a lot of smaller private schools who, while have had plenty of success, like a Wake Forest in football and in basketball, don't support their teams necessarily financially like the others, just plain and simple. And these two groups, whether it's five or seven over here and then seven or eight or whatever over here, have been pulling at each other. And then, of course, in the spring, and we talked about this, I know, at length when I was at SI, reported this story about the seven schools of the ACC that spent much of this last spring meeting with one another, trying to devise a plan to exit the grant of rights. And while that died, I think in a way, the grouping, I think a few of those schools are still very much alive thinking about ways out. And obviously, Florida State is leading the charge.
Absolutely. So your private schools are Georgia Tech, Duke, Miami, Boston College, Syracuse, and Wake. Right? That's six. And then there's eight public schools.
Duke?
Yeah, I had Duke in there. Florida State, Louisville, NC State, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, Virginia, Pitt. Look, the leagues never really fit. They tried to create this Eastern Seaboard thing. They went and raided some of the Big East, the old Big East. It's never quite fit. The ACC was the best when it was Tobacco Road based, and all these leagues are the best when they get back to their core. And we'll talk about that with the SEC and how that's a lesson to learn. But when you go too big, one of the things we talked about is like Boston College used to have a very successful athletic department on the field. It's never a huge draw with fans because it's in a pro market. Going to the ACC, they haven't been successful. Not a long time. Football, maybe when Matt Ryan was there. Like one season, but for the most part, they aren't even any good. Nobody goes to the games and they aren't good. They were good, but what you can compete in one way, you can't necessarily compete the other. Syracuse isn't the same. You know, we'll see. Different things have to happen. Virginia Tech hasn't been as good. Maybe they can get it back. So we call this an emergency pod, and it is. It should be a five-alarm emergency all over the ACC, all over the country. Because the Pac-12 just died with an early, people are like, nah, that won't go away. It's gone. And everything changed with it. This is a big ripple. If FSU is successful here, and we don't know that they will be, this is just a legal challenge to the grant of rights. However, they're going to look for a venue to be Tallahassee, Florida, which may help. We're not going to besmirch the impartiality of the judges in Tallahassee, but perhaps it would help to be done there. But everything can blow up. If FSU can get out, it's okay. Clemson. I don't think I mentioned Clemson in the other thing, did I? Maybe I did. Clemson, big state school. Clemson can get out. North Carolina can get out. Virginia can get out. Anybody can get out. And so all of a sudden it's a free for all, and not only can they these parts be picked apart, or small groups can go somewhere together. I mean, it is this is heading towards the two conference or three conference thing that we don't really want. When I spent a whole lot of time bemoaning the how much this sucks, but if you're a hardcore college sports fan, yeah, this sucks. And college sports leaders, you wish, would stare at this and go, we have to try to get organized or we're going to kill this thing. I do not anticipate that happening. I think everyone will try to grab the last nickel they possibly can, because that's how these entities act. But any idea on whether people think they'll be successful in winning this to get out of the grant of rights? Grant of rights is holding the ACC together. A lot of people want to leave. But once you can leave, things are going to change. They're going to leave. So can the grant of rights hold? It has held so far. Can it hold in the future?
Yeah, it has held. It's held for the most part historically, barring a settlement, which we saw in the Big 12, right? We saw Texas and Oklahoma being allowed to get out of the grant of rights a year early. And it was announced that they were going to pay a $50 million penalty each for getting out a year early. You can debate whether that was real after some good reporting by USA Today to show that maybe it wasn't $50 million. But anyway, there has been settlements to end grant of rights early, but I don't know that we've seen one like go to court through the court system. If we have, it hasn't been one that I'm aware of in recent history. Somebody had mentioned there was a Big East grant of rights challenge at some point, but I couldn't find anything on that. So it has held mostly historically. In just to give people an understanding, because I think a lot of people don't know what a grant of rights is, it quite frankly is granting the rights of a school's home competitions to a conference, the media rights to a conference. So for the next 13 years, the grant of rights stretches through 2036, I believe, the ACC owns Florida State's all home athletic events, owns the rights to them, the television rights to them. So obviously, you'd have to get out of that in order to move forward if you're FSU. And again, there's a couple ways here. There's the settlement with the ACC, getting some kind of settlement. Whatever the settlement would be, you know, you think of what a grant of rights is worth on an annual basis. Depends on who you ask, right? But it's probably somewhere from 30 to 50 to 70 million a year. So you're talking about a half a billion dollars potentially worth of grant of rights there. And then the other way, of course, is through court. And it's getting a friendly judge maybe down there in Florida and Tallahassee to rule that you're not bound by the grant of rights because of XX reasons. You know, you're not bound. And if that happens, or even if a settlement happens, one or the other, if Florida State finds a way out of this in some way, the door is absolutely broken open, right? And then right behind FSU, as I wrote today in that story, is probably Clemson. And then right behind them, probably others. You remember the seven that tried to get together and look at how they could maybe dissolve or whatever the league over the spring was Clemson, Florida State, Miami, North Carolina, North Carolina State, Virginia, Virginia Tech. And so you can imagine which schools are most likely to head out that door. So this could not only have an impact, right, for the ACC and those teams wanting to leave, but now if they get out, especially if it's through some kind of court ruling, then all of a sudden all these other grants of rights and all these other leagues are that sets a precedent for all of them.
Yeah, everyone could go, maybe. All right. So where are we going? That's what we're talking about. Now, there's a couple options, okay? Why would you want to leave? You want to leave, for a richer and better harbor. There are two of those, the SEC and the Big Ten. The other options would be the Big 12, which we could talk about, or getting your group of seven there, your seven schools or eight, and just reforming a different league and cutting out some of the schools that you don't think bring a lot of value. That would be another option. But that is not the goal for Florida State. That would be plan B or C or D. But that is still a thing. You could take those. You could form a smaller league and get a higher per capita or per pro rata or whatever you want, however you want to say it, media deal, perhaps. I don't know. And have some more scheduling flexibility, different things. But the goal here is either SEC or Big Ten. So let's start with the SEC because I think it's an easier one to break down the possibilities. I believe we both have been told, and I know Pat has, not a lot of interest in the SEC in expanding right now. Not a lot of interest in Florida State. Not a lot of interest in anything. They've got their 16 teams. They've got this big deal. They're pretty content on what they're trying to do. They move slowly. They carry a big stick, right? Is that, do you get any sense on that? I will say this, talk to a Big Ten person, say, listen, until the schools are available, it's really, how much thought did you put into it? We're not spending a lot of time worrying about hypotheticals. Well, all of a sudden, if it becomes, hey, we could add these schools, things can change quickly. But your thoughts on the SEC's mentality as of today?
Yeah, that's a big part of this is it's kind of like the analogy would be like a married couple, you know, Florida State in the ACC. And the SEC, you know, is not going to try to break up the married couple because legally they could get into trouble themselves over doing that. So you got to wait for the divorce filing to at least be made and maybe be completed. And that's what's happening here. Right, is Florida State probably is hoping that by starting the divorce proceedings, they will now hint to the SEC specifically and big, you know, we're talking about both of them, the Big Ten, that, hey, we're going to be available soon. Please think about dating us. So from the SEC standpoint, you know, just to put it honestly, they probably don't need Florida State. I don't know that either league does, but let's just talk about the SEC here first. And you know, they have the state of Florida with the University of Florida. Not only that, but they just added Texas and Oklahoma, right? Two big brands. They arguably, when you talk about the most valuable college football programs in the country, the SEC, I think, probably would have 8 or 9 of the 15. Why do they really need another one? Is it really that big a deal to have another one? So there's that part of this. There is another part, even though Florida State certainly fits in geographically and culturally, they certainly do. But you know, you're not going to add an odd member. You're not going to add an odd number. I've been told four.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You're not going to add odd. So there's kind of that pickle as well. And then what can you get out of ESPN, who's already paying for Florida State and the ACC? Florida State's not going to, ESPN's not going to agree to pay some kind of, probably not agreeing to pay a pro rata to the SEC to add Florida State. I wouldn't think. I mean, you never know. So there's that piece of it too. So I don't get the feeling there's a ton of interest. But again, part of that is because nobody wants to touch the Noles right now because they're married. But soon they're going to be maybe somewhat separated.
Yeah, things can change really quickly. So the idea that the SEC absolutely would not do this, I don't buy. They're not looking to. They weren't looking to add Texas and Oklahoma either. Then they did real quick. So, you know, if you come to them with a deal, they're going to take it. Now, obviously, if you're adding Florida State, you're adding someone else. The obvious choice would be Clemson. They're the most successful football program of this time, big national brand. But there could be others. Certainly, you could grab Miami, go heavy on the state of Florida, all three schools in the state of Florida. You could go North Carolina, which is hugely desired by everyone. Obviously, historic athletic department, basketball, big state, popular team, national brand, all that. So you could go any of those routes. You could look. So Florida State's going to come with someone. But again, as you said, does the University of Florida want Florida State and Miami to join the SEC? No. Does South Carolina want to have Clemson join the SEC? No, not at all. Do you need two schools in South Carolina? They used to put two schools in certain conference in states, and that's really what made these leagues great. But nowadays, because it's all business and not anything else, the idea of Alabama and Auburn or Mississippi State and Mississippi, particularly in a state the size of Mississippi, doesn't make any sense. Okay, maybe put two in Texas, but everything else, they would prefer one, and they try to bleed out the other guys. But so you have, but that's what happened in 1910, and now it's 2023. So there is opposition. There would be obvious opposition to Florida State or Clemson. North Carolina would be new territory. Virginia or Virginia Tech would be new territory. Big state, all that. You put SEC network in some homes, that's still going to give you some money for now. You know, hey, you go that route. Because once Florida State breaks that, again, it may not be Florida State that benefits. You know, I talked to someone at SEC. One of the things they're kind of discussing is really they built themselves as a national television brand, SEC football. And they don't necessarily need to be in every market with a team to be watched in every market. A lot of people all over the country have a favorite SEC team. And they have 16 teams. They have, as you said, 8, 9 of the biggest brands going. They have some plucky underdogs. They have some, it's a lot of culture. It fits. It all works and it should work. Can they just try to elevate the 16 they have to greater and greater ratings and greater riches and more playoff games and all of that and benefit that way than just kind of brand grab, land grab, all of that? And I think there is a sentiment in the SEC of like, let's let the 16 cook. We're really good shape. Do we have to grab these other schools? What exactly are we getting? And is it worth the risk of watering down what it means to be in the SEC if all of a sudden you're 20 deep or you're 16 deep or you're 18 deep or whatever? Like even North Carolina, which I think everyone would look at as an athletic program and a school you'd want to be associated with. What does it really get the SEC? I think they're watching SEC football in North Carolina already. So I just don't think there's that real push. But again, as you said, it's sort of like, that couple's, that woman's married. I don't even, whatever's going. Mm. Oh, wait a second. You know, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Not married anymore. But I think there's something else the SEC that's saying, I don't know. We are who we are. We want to be who we are.
Well, two good points there, right? As far as Florida State and Clemson is, the schools in those states fighting against it and probably have already fought against it and made their feelings known, I would imagine, to the league, that they would not want their in-state rival in their league, number one. And number two is the network in-state shares that you mentioned, that if you have a if you have a school in a state, you get a certain, you can charge a certain amount more, right, Dan, for when it comes to
basic cable?
Basic cable and the network, call it network shares. So you get more. Well, they have Florida already and they have South Carolina. But so I think there's no doubt that from both the Big Ten and the SEC, the more attractive options academically and athletically. Or probably North Carolina in Virginia, and maybe even their subsequent school, in-state schools, NC State and Virginia Tech. They might have to be along for the ride, so to speak. So one other thing you mentioned about getting a conference getting too big, that is definitely something discussed right now with all the lawsuits going on, is how big until you become, a separate organization that can be sued for antitrust or collusion or whatever else, you know, you want to sue for. So I think there's that fear. And I think going above 16, 18, something like that is you probably get to where you're a separate association. So that's in the back of everybody's mind, I think, going forward, as well as growing so large, then you become the focus of some of the legal issues going on.
Yeah. All right. So SEC possible, but it's not. I was told the one school that would fire the SEC up would be Notre Dame. Mm.
Yeah. Fire everybody up, huh?
That would fire everyone up. Mm-hmm. Now, can you get Florida State and Notre Dame? Maybe one of those guys can, you know, could you get North Carolina and Notre Dame? Would Notre Dame sit there and finally say, all right, this is it. It's all coming apart. I don't know that they have to do that yet. They do have this great Notre Dame, of course, is the ACC for all its sports except football. And then it has this great, very beneficial to Notre Dame scheduling agreement and beneficial to the ACC because they get to play Notre Dame and they get Notre Dame visiting their stadiums as part of their TV deal. But they get five games a year against Notre Dame, and Notre Dame is a big draw, remains a big draw, and is well positioned going forward with Marcus Freeman. So there is that. But I don't know. The Big Ten will tell you all the same stuff about they are the SEC. We care about academics, care about fit, care about culture, the legends and leaders, blah, blah, blah. That's all crap. The Big Ten has proven they will grab any dime rolling down the street that they can get. They added Maryland and Rutgers so they get basic cable houses, which is like, again, within 5 to 10 years won't even matter anymore. They went all the way to L.A. to grab USC and UCLA because they need more pop for their television negotiations. Then a year later, they decided, oh, heck, we'll grab Oregon and Washington because the TV people came and said, we still need more pop after that. There are 18 teams stretching from New Jersey and Maryland to the Pacific Northwest and Southern California. They have no culture, nothing. They just exist. They are about money. And along those lines, Florida State, Clemson, they could say they want North Carolina, Virginia because they're better academically or whatever. FSU and Clemson kind of come a long way in those regards. Once those schools are available, I don't buy the Big Ten saying, I'm not sure we really want them. If it gets them another $5, I've seen nothing in Big Ten behavior that suggests they're not going to grab those $5 and say, hey, we can get into the Florida market with Florida State. We can get into the Southeast with Florida State and Clemson. That's going to add TV dollars. We got three TV packages here. We joke a lot about NBC getting the third choice, the third best Big Ten game every week. And even with the addition of USC and Washington, Oregon and all that, it's still going to be there's going to be some Minnesota, Iowa games there that you're trying to sell on national TV. So is the Big Ten, I'm not saying it's imminent or they're ready to do anything, but I'm thinking they're the ones that ears are perking up here, and there's trouble in the marriage down the block there.
Well, and if that's the case and they end up showing the Big Ten an interest, does it become a case of Florida State then going back to the SEC and saying, hey, we would prefer you guys because just geographic and culturally and all that. But this other girl is showing some interest here, and we're going to go over there if you don't make a move. So you could see that happening.
Make them jealous.
That,
yeah.
That's kind of the SEC really want the Big Ten coming down into the South, and probably not, just like the Big Ten wouldn't want the SEC to go into the Midwest or
get Notre Dame, right? Yeah.
Or the Northeast or all the footprints that the Big Ten is now in. But I think you could pit one against the other potentially. But somebody's got to be really interested in order to do that, right? One of them's got to show real interest. in order to make that happen. And it's probably the same situation with Clemson. You know, it's probably a kind of a similar type of deal. You know,
the thing about Florida State is it's not. Yeah, obviously, Florida's a huge, what is it, the fourth biggest state? I don't know, third biggest state. Tallahassee's not a big market. It's not that easy to get to. There's different things. It's not a perfect deal. You don't control the TVs in all of Florida. First off, a lot of people live in Florida and grew up in Florida. You know, Tallahassee is pretty isolated where it's at in the panhandle. There's pro sports. There's, you know, it's just a very, it's a very international population in areas. You know, you don't have that traditional just college football. So it's big, but it isn't Oklahoma in Oklahoma or something like that, where pretty much everyone's a college football fan, or Iowa or whatever. So it has appeal to the big 10. But the other thing, you know, I mean, they're trying to acquire assets. I mean, that's all they got out of Oregon and Washington, and there's no buyer's remorse. Like, the TV deal is better. The schedule next year is better. Tradition, like what seemed totally ridiculous when it was first announced, a 4-team flank out west has pretty much settled in. I don't know if anyone in the Big Ten even's like, yeah, there is no Big Ten tradition anymore, really. Just let us play our local team. You know, we'll have our rival. So, you go down south, maybe that's it. Maybe you can force Notre Dame to jump in. Maybe not. I don't know. I know there's a lot of, I mean, I talked to a few different people and everyone's like, and I don't put anything past us. Anything could happen quickly. The Council of Presidents and Chancellors last summer, and Ross, you and I both were working this story. We broke it originally when they had interest in Oregon and Washington, and it kept going back and forth, right? And at one point, it looked like it wasn't going to happen. The Pac-12 was going to stay together. At one point, it looked like the presidents and chancellors didn't want Washington. Then all of a sudden, they just like, yeah, we do. They talked about adding Stanford and Cal as the 19th and 20th team for academics, research, and access to the money, alums, potential students of the San Francisco Bay Area and the technology firms and all of that, right? And, you know, these are the oh, yeah, better for academics. And then they were like, yeah, we're not taking Cal and Stanford. we don't need those guys. Like, if this was ever about anything else, they'd show that it was. This is about football viewers and appeasing Fox, CBS, NBC, and in the SEC's case, ESPN. I mean, that's who's running college athletics, is the TV networks.
Yep, I did remember what I was going to say from earlier. I meant to add in that when you're talking about pitting two leagues against each other for a team, it's kind of what happened with Texas, right? Texas was banging on doors in the neighborhood. Hey, we're going to be – let's let y'all know we're going to be moving out of the Big 12 house and we need somewhere to go. Who's interested? And they first knocked on the SEC's door, and Greg Sankey has even said publicly, right? If you close the door, they're going to the next house, ACC or Big Ten. So there was pressure put on there. So we've seen that happen before. So, you know, keep that in mind for sure. You know, TV money is a big part of this, right? The SEC is not taking in any league, most leagues right now are not taking a cut in their own distribution to expand. You got to have TV come with the funds. And Dan was, you know, you're talking about Washington and Oregon. And part of the reason it was going back and forth is TV networks weren't going to add any extra money at first, it seemed like. And then at the end, Fox came in with a full share for two teams. And so Oregon and Washington are splitting that full share and nobody else in the Big Ten has to take any kind of cut. So nobody in the SEC is going to take a cut to allow Florida State and Clemson in. None of the schools are going to take a diminished amount. And that wasn't going to happen in the Big Ten, right? Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, maybe some others were pretty vehemently against the expansion of Washington and in Oregon. But when Fox comes in with extra money and you don't have to take a cut, everybody kind of followed suit and did it, some of them begrudgingly. But the Cal and Stanford situation, I don't think Fox was ponying up any more money. And even if they would have, right, that had some pushback, I think, from a lot of people in the Big Ten. So it is all about money. If Fox and ESPN says, we'll give X amount. And now what Washington and Oregon did, and what SMU, Cal, and Stanford did as well, moving to the ACC for a portion of the distribution, or none at all in SMU's case, they've kind of opened the precedent for this to start. So you can imagine TV networks, maybe, you know, Florida State's on the market and Fox says, well, either one of us or ESPN's going to get them, right? And we're with the Big Ten and ESPN's with the SEC, so we'll give you $25 million, a quarter of a share or something, like a third of a share to go get them. You could see something like that happening.
Yeah. All right. Rest of the ACC. How nervous should this league be right now?
Well, there's a lot of teams in the ACC that are probably licking their chops at this. They're probably pretty excited to watch right. What happens, right? Because if the door gets cracked or opened or whatever by a judge, or if the ACC settles in some way with Florida State, it opens it up for all of them to potentially leave. So there's
how
a lot
many of them can really feel good that they're going to get a spot?
Yeah, no, I think that's a legitimate question, right?
Carolina, now, I'm not necessarily worried.
Right. And now is the big one league we haven't really talked about here is the Big 12 door open for some of these schools. You mentioned it, I know, in your column, Dan, is the leftover. If you start having teams leave at a pretty high rate, the leftovers, potentially the Dukes and the Louisvilles and maybe Pitt and all that, like more basketball-centric schools, man, Brett Yormark's building the best basketball league maybe we've ever seen in college athletics. It's pretty dang good. And so could the Big 12 gobble up some of them, and then all of a sudden what happened to the Pac-12 happens to the ACC?
Yeah, this is where – you know, you're looking at this thing going, this is why the Pac-12 breaking up. You know, you said, it's Washington State. It's this school out in the middle of nowhere, you know, whatever. It's like, well, it could be a lot of schools can become Washington State really quickly. Is the Big 12 have the ability grabbing whatever's left or making a move and grabbing? I imagine they will try to go in. they're willing to do some pre-divorce work, right? They're not worried about snooping around a little bit. They would try hard to get as many of the good best properties possible, but you know, whatever's left. I mean, take a school like Louisville, right? Has a very good basketball program, obviously not right now, but a great basketball program. But it has a very good football program. But like, where do they fit? So you know, now you're back to the Big 12. And you're back with all your old Conference USA and even Metro, the old Metro League schools, Cincinnati and things like that. That's not where Louisville wants to go. And for no fault of their own, maybe that's where they end up. I mean, there's only two places you want to get to. The Big 12 would be, you know, this massive. I mean, what do they already got? What are they gonna have? 16 next year?
They have 16.
16. Yep. I mean, you get to, again, 20, this massive span, Utah, Arizona. I mean, they're just all over the place.
Sure feels like, Dan, we're heading for 3 20-team leagues teams are cut out, right, or left out. Two being Washington State and Oregon, maybe 6 to 8 more in the ACC.
Right. And so now you got panic. I mean, it is panic time at some of these schools, especially these smaller private schools. Boston College, I mean, they have big stadiums on their – like, what? I don't even know what you do. What is your move? How do you survive this? What you should be worried about? But I think it is – the ACC is the This is you're tenuous. And this is a lesson to everybody in all these leagues. They're all going to cut. They're just going to keep cutting down. It's why as a sport, they like we talked last episode or a couple episodes about the Chip Kelly plan of just like, dude, we just all got to get together, be independent football, share the money. There's billions of billions out there. Share the money. Everyone's independent. We set some kind of scheduling arrangement up and then let your other sports operate on whatever's best for them. This is the bat. You can bring back the old ACC basketball league or the old Big East, you know, bust the college could be in the Big East for basketball and be in their football thing. You can, you know, they kind of, we've talked about this. We've had it, you know, water polo and stuff like that. They don't play massive lacrosse, hockey, different sports, wrestling have different memberships. Stanford plays field hockey in the America East Conference. Like they go to Maine. They go to New Hampshire, like, because this is what they got to do. They play field hockey. They don't have anyone on the West Coast. Do all of that, but get your football out. And no one's going to make that sacrifice. But I'm telling you, like, it like this is the precipice. We're at the end, but you can see it from here.
Yeah,
can they do it and save this, or else? Yeah, we're heading to 60 teams, 50. Yeah, like it's going to be you next.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I want to just kind of push a button and go back to how leagues were, you know, I guess before.
If they just would all share the revenue, but they don't even want to share the, like you're looking at it and it's like, no, heck no. Why are we doing that? And I get it, but there's a certain element to college athletics. It is an industry. It is a, it's not just a business. It's business, but there's a culture to it. There's an ethos to it that matters. And they're messing with that. And you know, maybe there's long term.
That's what makes it all so difficult, and what makes the athlete compensation situation difficult too. Right? Is it's half in, half out of a business. You know, it's got one toe in the business and a foot and a half into academic amateur athletics. And it doesn't know what it wants to be. I always use the word that college athletics for the last couple years, maybe more, have been in purgatory in between amateurism and professionalism. And it kind of continues to get pulled in running parallel to that, as we've talked about plenty on the pod. It's the tether to football, specifically major college football, high revenue producing football programs in higher education. And it just seems like we can't continue on this path any longer without an intervention from the federal government to provide some kind of protection. Or you push the button and you have employment and collective bargaining. It's probably going to have to be one or the other. In all of that, the athlete compensation model impacts all of this, all of the realignment, all of the money, all of everything. Sometimes I find myself in, like, you know, one of those times is now where I'm thinking, man, we're right in the middle of the biggest time of change in college athletics history. And it's moving so quickly. It's about the only thing that college athletic does quickly has been this. Recently, over the last couple years, really since COVID and then the NIL hit, and it's just wild how much change that we have had from realignment to athlete compensation. It's crazy. My head feels like it's scrambled sometimes trying to figure out where it is currently and where it will go.
Yeah, and quickly, like the conversations are just like, yeah, those programs are probably screwed.
Yeah,
and you're like, eesh. Like, okay. Yeah, I don't know. What can you keep? Everyone's out for themselves. It is a cash grab. It is a power grab. It is a seat at the table. It is musical chairs, and they're fighting.
More money, more problems, Dan.
More money, more problems is totally it. I don't know. But this is something that could impact all of it, you know.
And losing the ACC, if it gets to that, and I know that sounds crazy, but again, the Pac-12 went 108 years and then died like overnight, or died quickly. Empires, how do you go broke? How does a billionaire go broke slowly, then all at once, or something like that is the saying. It's pretty much where we're at. And so, I don't know, everyone's going to have to grab. I mean, there's certain things like, I mean, you think of the ACC back when I was growing up. I mean, it had this, I mean, they had four teams, right, on Tobacco Road, and that was the culture of it. And I don't know, the idea like Duke and Carolina aren't together would just be like, gosh, what are we doing? What's going on? But this is where we're at. Florida State, I understand their situation and understand their motivation and their frustrations and all of that. But I don't know. Anything else you're hearing on this? We tried to go slow and make it through this that made some sense to everybody. But I don't know. Anything else you're hearing on this?
No, not
any other topics.
Not really. I should note, and it was in my story, and I tried to tweet it out to clarify any confusion, but this is a fairly long process, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is
at least a year, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, you have two things going here. To get out of the grant of rights is, you know, unless like the ACC comes to the table, right, and like settles, it's probably about a year, you know, and then you have to give the ACC a year notification before leaving, right? So you got around 2 years, probably year and a half to 2 years at minimum, probably for this to happen. So it's a very slow process that we'll see. And just to make sure everybody knows, Florida State is in the ACC for the 24-25 academic year. In order to start somewhere new in 2025, fall of 2025, they have to give notice before August 15th of 2024, this coming August 15th. So keep those dates in mind. You know, the board meeting tomorrow, I think it's going to be live stream, so I'm sure there'll be some fun comments made. But
YouTube comments, yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. Yeah. It'll be fun.
Well, but, if anything, I think the end result will be, you know, filing a legal motion of some sort after the board meeting.
Yeah, I don't see it backing down now. They're going to file mm-mm. something. Mm-mm. All right. So this has been a serious and dark podcast so far. Your school might be screwed. Your other schools don't know. You may be stuck playing teams you don't want to play. Who knows? So let's have a little fun before the end. Emergency people's court, maybe. Sean, you in? Sean's in on the people's court since Pat's gone. And it's a holiday-themed one. And it's legal. Also a lawsuit. If you're driving around with younger children, here's your warning. I don't know how. Yeah, so this won't get. I would maybe end the pod now. Just in case. It's not that. It's not great. I don't know. I haven't really read. I don't really read through all the story. Anyway, it involves a Taco Bell that had a company party.
Oh, boy.
Holiday
Taco
party.
Taco Bell Christmas party? Oh, yeah. Man.
For the employees. Employee cop Taco Bell Christmas party. A former Los Angeles area Taco Bell employee is suing the company. This is KTLA. And a franchise owner, she claims a Christmas party at the fast food restaurant descended into a drunken mess that included open, we'll just call it a hookup. Mind you, this is at the Taco Bell, okay? She alleges her supervisor invited her to a December 18, 2022 party at the San Pedro Taco Bell at which she works. She was encouraged to bring food or a potluck style buffet. First off, that's BS. I guess maybe no one wants to eat Taco Bell because they work there, but, you know, come on, Taco Bell. You can't go to a restaurant party and have to bring your own food. I think that's just bad form, among other things that happened. Anyway, she brought a bowl of guacamole, so I don't know why that's in here. Once she arrived, she discovered her supervisor had covered the windows of the restaurant with wrapping paper and covered the security cameras for the lobby in the inside of the restaurant.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Look, at if a Taco Bell has its windows wrapped, you want to get to that party. You want in on that party. The chalupas are going. It's going to be, it's just, I mean, that, who knows what's happening inside of Taco Bell when its windows are wrapped. Sean, you ever been to a Taco Bell party?
Partied in plenty, even when they weren't hosted by Taco Bell, but, you know, it's hard to not get rowdy in there sometimes.
Not an official Taco Bell one, though.
No,
Taco Bell Cantina.
Well, they have the booze.
They do.
Yeah.
We got one just up the street from our place here. They got one in Alexandria, Sean, near you.
I've been to that cantina, and tell you what, the cantina version kind of takes the magic out of it. I think going there in a certain state and getting a party going where they don't serve alcohol is even more fun.
Well, this woman claims her supervisor provided alcohol to staffers, several of whom were, quote, overserved. Around midnight, she stepped outside for a short time, walked back into the restaurant. Party was after midnight at the Taco Bell. It's open late, fourth meal, all that.
Yeah, there you go.
She saw a coworker having, with his wife in front of everyone at the party. So the coworker
having
was,
what, a chalupa?
That's one way of putting it. That's weird, right? It's like boogie nights. What are they doing out there in LA? Everyone at the party was watching, and then it gets worse. I'm not even gonna get into this part.
Okay.
Shock, disgusted, and outrage is how it goes on. Additionally, she immediately ran out of the restaurant, came back because she wanted her guacamole bowl.
That's why it
got mentioned in the story. Only to find that her manager and another coworker were vomiting. One was vomiting in the trash, the other in her guacamole bowl.
Perfect.
That's not good. She reported the incident to Taco Bell Human Resources. They were all fired, the manager and some of the people who participated in aggressive behavior, I would call it, at the party. She says after ratting them out about the wild party, her car window was shattered by what she believes one of her coworkers.
Oh, retaliation.
Yeah. Yeah. Snitches get stitches, especially at Taco Bell. So, Ross, what's the settlement? Does this woman, does she have a claim, or she's just like not fun?
Just, you don't have to go ratting around, you know, just leave the party, take your guac bowl, get out. If they want to be smooching in the kitchen of the Taco Bell.
It was more than smooching. But still.
Well, then just leave the party. As long as
they clean up. Yeah.
Just leave the party. Yeah. 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 Nobody's getting hurt. In fact, the other thing is happening. Right? When people are getting the opposite of hurt if this is happening. Right? So leave the party, take your guac bowl, and, you know, don't be, as you said, don't be snitching.
Justice Anderson?
I'll say this. This party ruled. This party, it must have been phenomenal. I don't know why companies throw holiday parties. It seems like it's always a mess. There's always a guy. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. And nobody learns from their mistakes. But I kind of lean in favor of you're working at Taco Bell, and then now you get to party in the Taco Bell that you work, mm-hmm. no holds barred. That kind of rules. Like, that's pretty awesome of the manager to decide we're going to do this to our work establishment. In the end, though, you got to keep church and state separated a little bit. I think I lean in favor of the employee somehow. You're working at Taco Bell, and now you just got another mess to clean up, and you got more mess with the antics and people losing their minds. Employee right, the manager should be fired, but keep throwing parties across the LA area. They rule.
They should take this party on the road. Like, if you knew you could go to a party at a Taco Bell, I have not even any sympathy for it other than this. I mean, look, I'm 100%. I mean, this is a great party. I mean, yeah, it got a little out of hand. Maybe you don't want to see all that you're seeing, but people want to get, you know, get liquored up at the Taco Bell. The manager's providing the booze. Let's do this. Whatever lights the candle, man. Whatever lights the candle.
Yeah, the candle was lit, Dan. You know. That candle burned for a while.
Taco Bell holiday party. What do you expect, man?
I know. It's a thankless job.
Have you seen their tacos, the food they serve?
It's a thankless job. I doubt most of these.
It's going to be messy.
Restaurant, Taco Bell franchise, they don't do anything for these guys.
That's right.
They're back there making Mexi melts all year and they get nothing.
Yeah, that's right.
So this guy's trying. Now, look. The only claim she really had is that the manager and whoever else was involved clearly should have bought her a new guac bowl.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't make her clean her own guac bowl full of puke. That's just bad. That's just bad behavior. I mean, that's just a human, like, just an agreement amongst humanity, right? You don't need a court of law to say clean your own guac bowl.
I've never heard of people that messed up at the party doubling down and breaking the window afterwards. They should have apologized.
Well, you just
not decided to lash out. They weren't the victim.
A little Goodfellas here at the San Pedro Taco Bell.
I have a feeling that this story runs deep. I think this is a rich vein that was struck.
That's how quick I knew Jimmy was gonna whack Polly. Just like that, a guy gets whacked. One call to human resources. Next thing you know, our Toyota Corolla's back windshield busted. Yeah, I mean, they're not playing around at the San Pedro Taco Bell. I want to go to this place. Do they make better tacos? Worse? What is going on? No, it's like the prison yard of Taco Bells.
It must be better. I mean, judging by the party, I'm sure the tacos are wonderful, right?
I don't know if they had that much steam to let off. I don't know if their work was that exceptional.
Ain't no party like a Taco Bell party.
The messier Taco Bell though, the better, huh?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
Wife, by the way, worked at a KFC Taco Bell growing up in Arkansas. She was a window drive-through person at a KFC Taco Bell.
KFC and Taco Bell.
Yeah, it's a combo. Combo.
It's the melting. Welcome to the melting pot.
You can get a chalupa, and you can get a three-piece. You know, so she said she has quite a bit of stories from her time working
there. A little bit of everything.
Including the fact that she allegedly created the cheesy gordita crunch and never got credit. She's out millions.
Wait a minute.
Yep, I know. We don't have time, but she created the cheesy gordita crunch. She claims. Then a local supervisor, regional, whatever, was in town, had it because she just combined the whatever it is. What is it? It's took two combine into one tacos, and that's what. But she,
what is
she
it,
put
like
them
a
together.
Gordita with like a hard shell? They throw like that's
yes.
the cr- that's what they
yes yeah. yeah it's the hard shell and then it's the gordita with melted cheese on it. She combined them and created this dish, and the supervisor who was in town apparently got credit for it, got moved up. You know, Taco Bell made millions off of the cheesy gordita crunch, and poor Elizabeth got nothing.
Absolutely,
did he throw them a party?
No so parties.
At least get you guys should at least get an invite to San Pedro.
I know.
Taco Bell 2023 Christmas party. It's probably lame.
The new retreat destination.
I'm thinking the Arkansas
going
KFC
on your bachelor
Taco Bell
party. Guys
didn't
weekend.
Throw that good of a party.
We're gonna go to the Derby. We're going to New Orleans now. I'm going to Taco Bell San Pedro.
I like that. Yeah, Deloitte's got their big campus out in Texas where everyone goes and. You know, they get basically inundated in the Deloitte system. I like the idea of Taco Bell employees going out to California, throwing down, and then getting back to work.
Why did she invent the gordita crunch?
No, she. Oh, I don't. She was messing around and decided to put a hard taco into a gordita with cheese and just, ate it and showed it off to the managers and supervisors. And one manager told the regional supervisor, who I think came and visited, and then he basically took it and it went on from there. And she never heard from them again.
I mean, justice. What is going on?
She was foiled.
Justice for Liz. Yeah. Yeah. This is not fair. You know, you never know when just genius will strike.
That's
that
right.
That is a terrible story.
She's a smart girl.
Well, we tried to have some fun at the end. Thank you for our emergency pod. We don't think we'll have another one before Christmas, so enjoy your Christmas or whatever you're celebrating there at this time of year. We appreciate you listening, and we will talk to you later.